If you're looking to maximize your fundraising efforts, DonorBox's online donation platform is designed to help you reach your fundraising goals with ease. Discover the world of simplified, seamless fundraising at DonorBox.org. DonorBox, helping you help others.
Welcome back to the Nonprofit Hub podcast. I'm your host, Megan Spear, and we are joined today by Dave Raley, who's the founder of Imago Consulting. And I'm excited to dig into this, Dave. I've seen your LinkedIn posts about this. I've seen some of your talk clips from various conferences talking about a subscription model around fundraising and philanthropy. So I'm excited to dig into this today. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Megan. Excited to be on here.
Yay. So tell the audience a little bit about yourself and about Imago as kind of an introduction.
Yeah, no problem. So I was thinking about it. As we record this, I am 2 months from my 20th year of fundraising and marketing in the nonprofit space. And by the way, I host a podcast we'll talk about later. My co-host says, don't ever tell people that. It makes you sound old. And I'm like, well, isn't there credibility that comes with a couple of decades?
It makes you sound wise and experienced.
So yes, I'm very wise now. I do have a mentor that said that there's a difference between experience and wisdom, and I've always remembered that. So what I do with Imago Consulting is we basically are an advisory practice that works with nonprofits to help them create profitable growth through innovation. And so I am a huge advocate for organizations understanding what not only what the future holds, but specifically how their model works and what's holding them back from creating new growth, for lack of a better term. And that comes from 20 years of watching organizations that are really, candidly, they've invented one way of doing things, but often fail to transition to the next model. Mm-hmm. And every organization, every institution, every nonprofit, every for-profit goes through this classic, the S-curve, where it's like infancy, early growth, rapid growth. But then inevitably, every organization, every model goes through this slowing, plateauing, and decline. And I've seen my fair share of that in the charity world.
Yes.
And yet the need is not going down. The need is increasing. And so what does it look like for organizations to see and understand what's happening in the world and how they can change their model to take advantage of that and to accomplish their mission?
That's awesome. And you mentioned the podcast, but go ahead and tell us a little bit about that as well.
Yes, so very, very much on topic. Imago Consulting is my advisory practice, but I also co-founded and co-host what we call the Purpose and Profit podcast. Mm-hmm. And I do that with co-host Carly Berna. And we basically, every week, we're looking for the ideas at the intersection of causes and brands. So what we're doing is we're looking at the commercial sector and we're talking to, folks that have been in significant leadership roles in big brands and saying, hey, what are lessons that we can learn from your world and what you do to apply to the nonprofit sector and vice versa? So we also interview leaders from nonprofits and we say, what can you, business leader or brand leader, learn from the world of causes? Because I think far too often it's considered this like, the commercial sector has all the ideas and, they're always years ahead of the nonprofit sector. And while in some categories that is actually true, there are many things I believe that causes have to bring to the table that businesses and, leaders of commercial organizations can learn from. So we'd really try to make it a two-way exchange. And so we have people on from, we've had people on from Disney, and we've had people on from Domino's Pizza and Borders Bookstores. One of the interviews we just completed was a gentleman who opened the third ever Blockbuster in the United States.
Okay.
His name's Tom. And I think it's so funny because so much of this, the interest in Blockbuster these days is on failing to transition to the next model and failing to innovate, right, and how they went out of business. But if you think about it, Blockbuster literally invented a new model for how you could do video rental. Now they failed to transition to the next model, and so I think they're a good example of both innovating and then being disrupted. But so it's just super fun. We're just in the midst of season four and loving it.
Well, I would give it my stamp of approval. I have listened to many episodes and they are super interesting. So definitely check that out. But actually, I think Blockbuster is a really great segue into our topic for today, right? Because if we think about video service subscriptions instead of Blockbuster,
like
the thing that Blockbuster didn't do, if you will, kind of a good segue into what we're talking about here. Because I will be honest, I just recently, maybe within the last month or so, downloaded the app that was all over my Instagram that was telling me like all of the subscriptions that you have.
Was it the Rocket Money app?
It was the Rocket Money, and I started eye-opening, right? Things that I just kind of forgot about or didn't pay attention to, because we so heavily live in this subscription culture now. Netflix, Hulu, whatever the case may be. But that's not typically something that you think about in terms of donors and philanthropy. So talk to me a little bit about what the subscription model is on the nonprofit side. What does that look like?
Yeah, you know, I remember when I first started noticing just in my own personal consumption habits that subscriptions had become a pretty dominant part of the spending,
the spending
category.
And,
you know, if you think about even Netflix is often considered one of the early pioneers, you know, if you're not thinking about things like, for example, magazines and other, you know, fitness, there's subscriptions that have been around for many, many decades. But if you look at, I just noticed that was something that was happening in my own life. And because I've been in marketing and fundraising, and I've seen the frustration, particularly among a huge category of nonprofits that have not been able to really take advantage of building recurring giving programs. I mean, like, Megan, the first nonprofit fundraising program I ever worked on at the beginning of my career was for a rescue ministry and homeless shelter mission in Los Angeles called Union Rescue Mission. And it was a monthly giving program. And I just remember it being a ton of work, learning a lot, but also just being kind of disappointed at what little percentage of the revenue recurring giving was for that social services nonprofit. And over the years, I saw that a lot, in that you had nonprofits that were in one camp. Either they could do a what I would call one-to-one sponsorship or staff support type model, where it's a great monthly giving program. You know, you give, you know, the donor knows the beneficiary, or at least, you know, has an idea of who the beneficiary is. Great. Problem is, most nonprofits don't have the program model to be able to take advantage of that. The other category that's gone very well historically for nonprofits is what I would call membership. And that is nonprofits that have some sort of value exchange. So they are the local, think about your local zoo or museum or public television, public radio. You know, there's these nonprofits that provide basically a good or a service, but are donor supported. And so it's like, well, I give, but I also receive some sort of benefit, or somebody in my family or somebody I know receives. The problem is, Megan, that my estimate is that 75% of nonprofits are neither of those first two.
Mm.
And they're like Union Rescue Mission was 20 years ago, where it's like, we have some people that give to us monthly. They write us a check. They check the box. But it's really a fraction of the revenue and the opportunity. Okay. So fast forward 2000, you know, mid 2010s. It's like, man, these subscriptions are everywhere. Yeah. In fact, today they're quite annoying, because it's like, you know, I didn't want to subscribe to that, but I guess the only way I can get access to that product is to subscribe. And so so I just began to wonder, like, I wonder if this is going to change or influence donor behavior in any way. My part of my background is doing digital fundraising. And so one of the things I just noticed in that area is there were always these like consumer trends that often predated donor behavior changes. Classic example, fundraising on social media. I don't know about you, Megan, but I'm old enough to remember, one, we called it new media back then.
Ooh.
Ooh. And I remember when clients would say, hey, there's this new Facebook platform. I think we should you think we should fundraise on it? And the answer, by the way, for the first couple of years was no, like, it's not a good fundraising platform.
I'm going to tell you, here's a story.
Okay.
Quick story. So our mutual friend, Brad Davies.
Yep.
This is how long Brad and I have been friends. Brad Davies used to have a quote years and years ago, which is very funny now considering what we all do for actual livings, where he would say that asking for a donation on social media is like making out in church. You can do it, but it's really frowned upon.
It's really frowned upon. That is, I'm never ever going to forget that quote.
Yeah, it has stuck with me for a very long time.
That's hilarious.
And hilarious to see like where it has cycled through to where we are now. But yes, you're right. Those first few years, it was a little bit like making out in church.
Yeah, it just, I don't even know what to do with that. But no, it just, it didn't make sense. Like it didn't work until several things happened. Number one, over the course of several years, brands started to advertise to customers using this thing called Facebook. And Facebook figured out, wait a second, I think we can make money by selling ads in this process. And so as consumers became more comfortable with opening their wallets and purchasing and living their consumer lives in conjunction with their social media lives, then, and I think it was the Haiti earthquake, that was the sort of the linchpin moment from a philanthropy perspective, in my opinion. This is for social media fundraising. Haiti earthquake happened. American Red Cross partners with Facebook, and they raised $30 million in one day. And it was just like, what is happening?
Yeah.
And it was really that consumer comfort level with putting your credit card in online, associating your purchasing habits with your social media profile. So those sorts of things conditioned donors to ultimately change their donor behavior. So back to the subscription economy, that same thing I wondered, is this going to happen in the subscription space? Are we going to see donors start to think and behave and treat and expect different things from nonprofits? And sure enough, over the course of, I've probably been watching this now for 8 years, it has absolutely started to change and transform the way donors behave, the way they think about their interaction and their monthly giving with nonprofits, which, remember, are 75% of nonprofits that have historically not been able to take advantage. This is like the moment for them. Now, I would say the last 4 years have been the moment for them, which is so funny. Everyone wants to pretend these trends are new, and it's like, no, there's nothing new under the sun. But this is a moment for nonprofits to be able to take advantage of, and I'm fired up about it, if you haven't picked up on that. And how can we help them understand and take advantage of that opportunity?
Elevate your fundraising strategy effortlessly with DonorBox, the online fundraising platform that streamlines your operations, amplifies donations, and delivers a user-friendly experience for your supporters. Design captivating donation forms, accept digital wallet payments, seamlessly monitor donations, and automate receipt generation. Joining is a breeze with no setup or monthly fees. From customizable donation forms and 4 times faster, ultra-swift checkout to seamless in-person giving with DonorBox Live Kiosk, DonorBox makes giving simple and fast for your donors. Visit DonorBox.org and unlock your full fundraising potential today.
So I would venture a guess, and this is just my shot in the dark, that most nonprofits, I'm going to put it at probably 85 to 90%, have a button on their online giving form that says, make this donation monthly or, you know, whatever. Everybody has the little box on their online giving form. Is there something that nonprofits should be doing beyond that to adopt this model? Because I feel like that would be the pushback, right? Is everybody's listening to this going, I have the button. I'm good. I don't need this.
Yeah.
Right. Is there a specific way that we're marketing that or talking about it that helps to drive philanthropy that way?
Yes, there are many things, candidly, that I think a nonprofit should be doing in response to this. Number one is, yes, make sure you can actually take monthly giving. I can remember clients that I had in those mid 2010s that were like, you know, if you would like to make a gift monthly, here's a physical mailing address. I'm not kidding. I won't name names, but you know,
we'll send you the little envelope.
Like, nope, that's not how that works. Today, that's not really a problem. I've not run into an organization in years that doesn't at least have the checkbox or the tab or whatever. But the problem is that nonprofits are still treating monthly giving like a transaction type. So what do I mean by that? It's like, well, it's a checkbox. Like, well, would you like to give monthly or would you like to give one time? And they don't recognize that there is a vastly different value proposition for giving a single gift, which can often be an impulse or in response to a momentary need, which is powerful, by the way. I've done a lot of single gift fundraising in my career. But there's a vast difference between that and a decision to let you take money out of my account every month or every quarter. And, you know, we've got on the consumer side, you've got apps now that are tracking those monthly transactions, by the way, including your monthly nonprofit giving, not just your Netflix subscription. And so the value proposition is just not well thought through. And so what I see nonprofits, I'll just give you an example of one mistake that I see nonprofits making still to this day. And that is they take their best single gift offer and they say, would you just give 12 of those a year? You know, would you just give that monthly? So I'll give you the example. Mm-hmm. I mentioned Union Rescue Mission all those years ago. When I first joined and worked on the program, it was a meal a day program. That was the idea because often monthly giving programs, the price point, you know, the dollar level giving was about $30-$35 a month. It's like, awesome. That's actually the cost of a meal, single meal for a single person at the mission was around $1, $1.30, something like that. So we're like, awesome. Well, we'll just ask people to give a meal a day. Well, again, remember this program was not really going gangbusters, was not really working very well. And one of the issues, now this is again, was years ago before some of the subscription stuff, but one of the core issues was that we just basically said, assumed that our best normal fundraising offer would just work as an ongoing need. But the reality is a meal, one, is very inanimate and not human and not, you know, there's no human connection there. But the other thing is it works really well at Thanksgiving and Christmas and Easter and when people associate, you know, feeding programs and generosity and all that kind of stuff, but it doesn't work really well in January, you know, even though ironically, as we all know, social services organizations are still serving lots of meals in January, it just doesn't work as an offer. And so it's like, and I'll just give you the subscription example. It's like if you came to me 10 years ago, Megan, and you said, hey, Dave, there's this new product and you can like rent music for $12.99 a month. Isn't that awesome? Don't you want to do that? And I would have said, heck no, I've got my library now. I am young enough that it wasn't a CD collection. It was an MP3 collection. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, why would I? No, I want to own my music. I don't want to rent music. Because if I stop renting music, Megan, I'm not going to have access to it anymore. That's a ripoff. I don't want to do that. Well, I'm going on year four now, Megan, of sending Spotify, you know.
Absolutely.
Whatever, $12 a month. And I gladly send them that money. Yep. But do I do it because of the single purchase transaction mindset? Like I'm buying music? No, I don't think of it that way. The reason I subscribe to Spotify is far more than renting music. The reason I subscribe to a Spotify is because of the joy of discovery, for example. Like, oh my gosh, like I couldn't actually tell you most of the artists I listen to because they're, you know, whatever Spotify recommended next. And I just think it's amazing. So there's that thrill and joy of discovery. There's the fact that I can listen to it in my car or on my phone or on my laptop or in basically anywhere, anytime. I get ongoing access. Yes, I do get the world's worth of music. So, you know, that's helpful. But Spotify understands that the entire value proposition has to be an ongoing value proposition, not a single purchase, or in the case of fundraising, a single gift mindset. So circling back all the way back to organizations like Union Rescue Mission, you've got to think about what is the kind of value proposition that works on an ongoing basis. And organizations that I've worked with that are like them will often have, just to use an example for them with a human connection is at that time, more than 50% of the guests that were coming to receive services from the mission were women and children. And people did not understand that. They thought the classical stereotypical homeless man, you know,
sure.
on the street corner, and there was just not a realization. So what we did was we retooled the program to be essentially a representative child and family sponsorship, where we would make the names and, you know, likenesses private, sure. but we would share, hey, each month, here's somebody you're helping and their specific story. And that program immediately, the fulfillment rates jumped by 25%. The program was growing again. And so it's those kinds of insights that I think nonprofits need to be thinking about in the subscription economy.
That's great. Again, we're talking to Dave Rayleigh of Imago Consulting about the subscription model. So I want to ask this then, as nonprofits tend to kind of evaluate, right? Here we are. We want to do this subscription model. We want to embrace that messaging around building our recurring program. Are there yet best practices in terms of price point? Right? Because price point, for the most part, when I think of my subscriptions, right, if you ask me to do something that's less than, I'm going to cap it at probably $15 a month, I probably don't think about that as much as I should, right? Like, because eventually all the 15s start to add up and then we get to where we are today. But are there price points that make that an easier piece? And then what's the plan?
Yeah.
Right. So by which I mean, there's a nonprofit that I currently support on a monthly giving model. I give them $10 a month. And I have been doing this for a year and a half at this point.
Mm-hmm.
What then does the follow-up and next step look like, or should it look like, right, for me with that organization? Is there, hey, we want to, you know, every now and again, Spotify sends me an email and is like, hey, to keep the current service you have, yeah. we're bumping it up a dollar.
Upgrade. Yeah. So I think.
What does that look like on this side?
I love that question, by the way. I haven't thought about it in that particular way. I would say, because there are some sort of lost in translation moments that happen between, you know, consumer subscriptions and donor,
sure.
donor value. For example, consumers are notoriously flaky when it comes to subscriptions, you know, dropping subscriptions, adding subscriptions. That has influenced donors, by the way. I do believe donors are more likely to switch or to stop giving on a recurring basis. But it's different. If I haven't used Hulu in 3 months, I'm going to cancel the subscription because I'm not giving to Hulu for philanthropic
for
altruistic
benefits,
reasons.
Yes.
Like, I am not using your product, so I'm not going to do that. So you often see, for example, higher retention rates in subscription giving, which is how I refer to it, than you would in subscription consumer. But back to your price point. I think the biggest difference is actually more in that last point you said, which is the really what the upgrade strategy looks like.
Yeah.
Because these organizations understand that it's not only an ongoing commitment, it's an ongoing subscription, or in the case of fundraising, it's an ongoing gift, but that the needs, the expenses of the business, for example, yes. and then do go up over time. And so
sure.
We've sponsored a child through Compassion for, 10 years, because that's how old my youngest daughter is. And we sponsored a child that shared her birthday when she was born.
Hmm.
And for the first time in 10 years, Megan, they actually did change the price
sure.
point of, at least to me as a donor. They may have done that to new donors over the years, but they yeah. said, you know, it costs a lot more for us to deliver the services
sure.
to Eliani, who's in Dominican Republic, and her family and her community, than it did 10 years ago, Dave, when you signed up. And so I remember thinking, oh, that's gutsy. Yeah. They basically gave you a couple months notice and, hey, your gift amount's going to increase. So that's one way of doing it. But I think most of the time, the price point is less important, candidly, than it has ever been before, because donors all have different levels of comfort with giving. And for one donor, $100 a month is the same thing, like feels the same to them as a $10 a month. And I know nonprofits that have donors that give $2,500 a month because it's just, they like collecting their miles and, you know,
sure.
airline miles, and that's how they do it, you know? So I think price point's less important, but what is important is using subscription techniques, like understanding that we actually need to upgrade our donors, and we need to consider yeah. asking them for a way, you know, if they would consider increasing their gift amount. And there's a lot of different tactics you can do, but I think that's probably the biggest overlap between the two.
Yeah, I just I was thinking about that just because I saw that my particular $10 gift pop out earlier this week. And I thought, you know, I've been giving them $10 for a really long time. Somewhere there's got to be some sort of strategy that says, you know, I bet Megan could do 15 or 20.
Yeah. And don't even get
and
me started.
And what do we like, how do we cultivate that?
Yeah. Well, and I was going to say, don't even get me started on the churn.
Yeah.
Like when your credit card gets replaced because, you know, some hacker somewhere stole somebody's identity, right? And I had that happen to me last year. And that happens quite often, as we all know. I had a credit card that had to be replaced. And I thought, oh, this would be an experiment. We'll see how many of the nonprofits I give to on a monthly basis actually contact me, how long it takes them. Megan, I give to, I won't say how many, but more than a few nonprofits regularly on a monthly basis. And I had one that actually contacted me within like 2 or 3 weeks of that decline. And then one more about a month later. And the rest of them, I think I can't think of another nonprofit that even like made a significant effort to recover that monthly gift.
Wow.
And if that happened on your Netflix subscription, you'd be getting emails.
Absolutely.
And, alerts and, you know, and all this sort of stuff. And so even just some of the churn behavior. I was just at a conference last week speaking. It's called the Sustainer Day. Really cool organization. I gave the opening keynote. And they had some folks from multiple payment providers there. And they said the estimate I heard was anywhere up to about a 25%. Of your donors will churn in any given year, monthly donors will churn in any given year because of what they call involuntary churn, i.e. they didn't intend to stop giving, but because the bank decided it was fraud or because they had a credit card replaced or an expiration or whatever reason. And so how can nonprofits then use some of the same for-profit strategies to recover that involuntary churn? So there's a lot.
If only there was a company they could outsource to that would help them with some of those things.
If only.
If only.
There are a few.
There are. That's great. So when it comes to this subscription model, most people would say things like, you know, he's the expert, he wrote the book on it, but you literally are writing the book, right? Is that what I understand?
Yes. I've been working on the book candidly for about 18 months. I've been speaking on the topic for, like I said, about six or eight years, but just really wanting to help leaders to not only see the opportunity, but then how they could take advantage of it. And there have been some books written over the years. Most of them are, some of them were written maybe 15 years ago. And so even ahead of their time, because it wasn't about the subscription economy at that point.
Sure.
And so, you know, none of these things are new, but it's very much a building on others' work. But I just am passionate about helping nonprofit leaders see that this is a thing, and not only that it is a thing, but that they can actually, that they can take advantage of it, and that nonprofits, and then how, like, well, what do we do?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so working on the book, and so stay tuned, we'll talk about it. Maybe we can do another episode.
Just out of curiosity, as one who has also published a book, how are you enjoying this process?
How am I enjoying that? That's a leading question, Megan.
Is it an enjoyment process?
If you would have told me when I was a kid, or even in college, hey, you're going to be a writer someday and a speaker, I would have been like, I don't think so.
Good.
And it was mostly because it seemed like a lot of work. And it turns out, Megan, it is a lot of work.
It is a lot of work.
But there's just, I have a fire in my belly for getting these ideas into the world. And so there's this, just the passion drives the method or the media, you know? And so for me, it's like, I don't hate it. It's not like torture, but it also is way harder work than anybody who hasn't written a book certainly would have any idea of. And, you know, it's like, I've been speaking about this for 8 years. I should just be able to write down what I spoke. And it's like, not so easy to organize those ideas. And like, I hope most nonfiction authors, I have a deep desire to make sure I'm representing the world as it exists today, accurate, truthful, helpful, and not just sort of pontificating on my ideas. And so I'm also doing a national study of organizations that are doing recurring giving, and I'm well into that. And so it's like, hey, let's not do any harm here. Let's make sure that this is helpful to the industry, and I'm passionate about doing it right.
That's great. Well, I can't wait to read it when it comes out. I'll be first on the list. Because all of this experience, I mean, I am going to call it wisdom that you, 20 years of wisdom that you bring to the space. So I'm excited for that to come out and everybody to be able to access that. So Dave, thank you so much. This conversation has been really helpful. And I think giving people some really practical takeaways for how to embrace the subscription model. Thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. Hope this is helpful for your listeners. Love what you're doing.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for joining us. Again, this is Dave Raley with Imago Consulting. I'm your host, Megan Spear, and this has been another episode of the Nonprofit Hub Podcast. We'll see you next time.